Across all of ESPN, we're kicking off V-Week on November 30th. We do it every year around the start of the college basketball season to honor our teammate, Jim Valvano, by supporting the V Foundation for Cancer Research, the foundation that he announced in his unforgettable ESPY speech so many years ago. And Jim's message of don't give up, don't ever give up, means even more to us this year than ever before. We're seeing it hit especially close to home with our beloved teammate and cancer fundraising champion, Dick Vitale, in his recent cancer diagnosis. If you're able to join us today in supporting the V Foundation for Cancer Research, you can give by going to v.org/donate now. Also, Baldwin on Campus, an ESPN podcast hosted by Jay Billis, LaFonso Ellis, and Seth Greenberg. These ESPN basketball personalities give you an all-access pass inside the world of college basketball, talking to the biggest names in the sport. That's Baldwin on Campus. Listen wherever you get your podcasts. What's up, guys? Welcome to a brand new episode of DC and RC. Well, it's just DC today because Ryan Clark, my man, got sick, got caught up in his travel. It has been a nightmare. Listen, when you're the businessman in entertainment and you're on Get Up, then you're rushing the first take, then you're doing NFL Live, things tend to happen. Maybe my boy is just a little run down. So, Ryan, get healthy, get some rest, and your boy got it. I'll take care of it for this week, but I will hold you accountable next week to be back taking L's to me on the list. Now, if Ryan's not here to take L's, I have to have somebody, right? So I'm bringing in Michael Chandler today. He's going to talk to me about not only his fight with Justin Gaethje. He's now gotten into it with Conor McGregor, which if he can somehow get this fight, who's had more high-level fights to start a career than Michael Chandler? Then we'll get joined by Beneil Dariush, who just got his fight with Islam Makhachev announced the other day, which is easily the number one contenders fight at lightweight. And then we're going to get into Rob Font taking on the legend Jose Aldo later in the show. And I will get to your Ask DC questions. Listen, when I put the picture up, someone put Combat Carl is taking your questions because they call me Combat Carl Winslow. And so I'll get to the questions later in our tap in, tap out session. But let's get to one right now as the show gets started. So here's the question. R Fernie 28 asked, DC, how can Dariush's skills match up with Islam Makhachev? Now, that's a great question. Because when you look at what Islam has done to everyone, it doesn't seem like there's anyone in the lightweight division that can match up with his skills. But the one guy that truly has a unique enough style to present some problems for him is Beneil Dariush. And the reality of the situation is, to me, more than anything, Beneil Dariush is an issue because he has a really no-care-about-him approach to his fights. Beneil Dariush isn't going in there afraid of anything. He's not afraid that you're going to take him down because he has tremendous jiu-jitsu. He's not afraid of the stand-up because you know he has knockout power. He can fight everywhere in the octagon, and he's got tremendous cardio and heart. So he's not afraid of anything. So for all the skills that he possesses, for the wrestling, for the jiu-jitsu, for the kickboxing, he has a tremendous coach in Rafael Cordero out at Kings MMA. For all those skills, I think the thing that makes Beneil stand out above everything is that no cares given attitude that he takes it to the octagon. And honestly, there's a much more explicit word for the way Beneil Dariush approaches his fights. But let's keep it PG and say the no cares giving approach that he takes. He doesn't care. So he's going to just go out there and fight Islam as he fought against Dracar Close, as he fought against everyone else that he's fought over the course of his career. And he's been in there with absolute killers. Guys, I would like you to throw up a board with some of these opponents that Beneil's been in there with. He's been in there with a who's who of people inside the UFC's octagon. The guy has seen the best of the best. He's fought the best of the best. He's had success against super high-level fighters over the course of his career. So this is nothing new to him. Now, this is what makes it very tricky. Beneil, honestly, has more of those top five type of fights than Islam. He's been in there with Tony Ferguson, Diego Fajeda, Scott Holtz from Jakar, close Frank Camacho. The Frank Camacho fight was a tremendous fight, insanely fun. Obviously, the Jakar close fight created one of the greatest memes that we've ever had. But these are just his last five. These are his last five fights. When you go back and look at the people that he has shared the octagon with, Beneil Dariush just fought everybody. So the fight with Islam does not really raise any hairs on the back of his neck. The guy's going to go and do what he does. But in the fight with Islam, he is fighting Islam Makhachev, who has shown time and time again that he has just been dominant. The guy's won 9 fights in a row. Beneil's won 7. Islam is 21-1. Islam got knocked out in Houston a long time ago, got caught by a head kick. And I spoke to him once, and he said the guy's career went downhill. Adriano Martins, career went downhill. It was a lucky shot, is what Islam said it was, that got him beat. But that's the only blemish on his record. Beneil's got a sparkling record, 21-4-1. I mean, both guys are unbelievable finishers. But as we have seen lately, Makhachev has not only finished people, but he has dominated super high-level fighters in a way that we haven't seen since Khabib Nurmagomedov. And I know Khabib has not been gone for a long time. So saying since we've seen Khabib may seem a little bit much, considering we saw him last year. But what Islam Makhachev did to Dan Hooker was tremendous. It was an opportunity to go and truly capitalize on an opportunity. You don't do that very often. You don't shine in that moment as much as he did. Very few times do a person get the chance on the biggest stage and knock the ball out of the park. Islam did that against Dan Hooker. And honestly, if Islam Makhachev was fighting for the belt now after winning 9 fights in a row, no one would be complaining. But it speaks to the type of fighter he is to take on what many believe is the second toughest fight in the division for him outside of whoever the champion is. You're talking about a guy in Beneil Dariush who possesses skills, unique skills, to give Islam problems. But Islam has dominated grapplers. He has dominated wrestlers. He has dominated strikers. And he has shown that he is really ready to try and become a UFC champion. Now, when I tell you it's a true number one contenders fight between these two, it leaves you the question. What about Justin Gaethje, right? Justin Gaethje just had that great fight with Michael Chandler. So why wouldn't Justin Gaethje be the guy? Well, Justin Gaethje is the guy. And I think this booking proves without a shadow of a doubt that the title fight is for Justin Gaethje. He said that if he didn't get it, they would riot. I golfed with Justin Gaethje a couple weeks ago, and we spoke about it a little bit, and he spoke about the authenticity of the sport of mixed martial arts and how if it's going to be considered what it is, a sport at the highest levels, he had to be the next guy. So yeah, Justin Gaethje is getting the title fight. And could you imagine a Justin Gaethje versus Charles Oliveira fight? He's the champ going into the fight with Dustin Poirier. Everybody seems to forget that, but Charles Oliveira is the man. He's got the title. But could you remember the first fight between him and Dustin Poirier? And could you imagine a rematch? This fight here with Michael Chandler, I went back and did a detail. You can find it on ESPN Plus under Detail by Daniel Cormier. I did a detail on this fight. The high-level mixed martial arts between these two was next level. And Justin Gaethje, everybody thinks he's a brawler. And I spoke to Kamaru Usman about this the other day. He goes, I watched that detail, DC. And he goes, people think that Justin's brawling. He goes, there's a method to the madness. And when he's in there, it may seem like he's involved in blood and guts wars, but he's not. Justin Gaethje is setting traps. He's setting you up for what he wants you to do so that he can follow and capitalize on what you're trying to do and the mistakes that you make inside of those interactions. So if a guy deserves a title shot, it is Justin Gaethje. And honestly, if Justin Gaethje would have fought for the belt opposed to Michael Chandler against Charles Oliveira, who would have had a problem with it? He was the last interim champion before Khabib Nurmagomedov beat him in Abu Dhabi and retired. He was 1A to the champ, Khabib, but he just didn't get the shot because he had just lost to Nurmagomedov. They didn't want to put a guy that had just lost to the champion back in the title fight because it almost messes with it. But by watching him beat Chandler in the way that he did, going out there and winning a fight of the night in Madison Square under the circumstances, in the way that he did, truly amazing. And really just hammered home the Justin Gaethje title fight. What would scare me a little bit, though, is that the Dariush fight with Makhachev is in March. So you got to hope that that guy in December comes out relatively clean so that they can reschedule him against Justin Gaethje early, because Makhachev's going to fight Dariush. If he wins and he's the number one contender, he'll go into Ramadan and it'll push him into the fall. So that gives you a little bit of time for Justin Gaethje and the champion to get their business done. So it's starting to kind of work out in terms of the timeline for these guys to really come to build a clearer picture of the lightweight division. Now it's time for one round, and we brought in Michael Chandler. Iron Mike, what's going on, brother?
What's up, DC? Living the dream, man. Hey, good to see your face on my phone.
Hey, that's a beautiful living room. Wow. I mean, all this money, right? Look at that living room, Chandler. Did you design this? Was it the great Bree Chandler that got this done?
It was the great Bree Chandler. Let's be honest. She does all the designing in the family. We got some art being hung this week, so we're excited about it.
Look at this guy living the American dream. So, Chandler, listen, man. The other day, we're in Madison Square. Everything seems normal. Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, normal fight week. Saturday, an explosion between you and Justin Gaethje. Third round, you're fighting a great round, and then you decide to drop your hands and just say, let's go. I mean, what was that moment like for you, Mike? I know it's a few weeks ago, but what was that moment like for you? And what does it feel like to, even in a defeat, your stock seemed to have risen after this Justin Gaethje fight?
Man, yeah, it probably wasn't the smartest of ideas, especially against a guy like Justin Gaethje. Well, I think I was caught up in the moment. It's definitely the first time in my career that I didn't care whether I won or lost for some reason. You know, I also didn't hear my coaches for the entire 15 minutes. Madison Square Garden was so loud. It was absolutely bananas inside there. You know, you were in there, but it was just – I usually, as wrestlers, we've been trained, and then now fighters, we've been trained. We can hear our coaches. Could not hear a thing. So I was out there by myself, unfortunately. And when I'm left to my own devices, it's a lot of ill-advised things happen. But they were entertaining. So the fans won that fight.
They did. And Mike, I mean, the picture of you with the apple slices and the face mask on afterwards, like, did you, in those moments where you're like, okay, man, I maybe should not have done that, like, how much pain were you in after that? Because I know that, man, Sunday is bad, but by Wednesday, it's ridiculous.
Yeah, man, because as soon as – yeah. And then in flying, of course, you know, and then you got distracting injuries. You know, both my leg and my right foot hurt from both checking leg kicks or, you know, eating leg kicks and throwing leg kicks. And then the face – you know, the face looks the worst, but the face is the best part about it. I can deal with a couple – black eyes and a couple sets of stitches, but it was more the body pain that I was in for like about the last first two weeks. But I've been doing a lot of recovery stuff, a lot of hyperbaric chamber, a lot of manual body work, and body feels great now. So I'm about to get back to training.
The hyperbaric chamber is literally the greatest invention ever known to man for injuries. Like, you just recover like this. It's insane how good it works. So, Mike, you fought Dan Hooker on a pay-per-view. Now, granted, you had a great resume coming into the UFC. You know, the wars in Bellator with Eddie Alvarez and all the championships, all that. Obviously, granted, you some opportunities. But you fought Dan Hooker on a pay-per-view to get here. Knockout. Next fight for a title. Then you fight on the massive fight in Madison Square Garden. And now, all of a sudden, you're on the internet arguing with Conor McGregor. Even if you can pull this off, if the McGregor fight happens, will you have had the greatest four-fight run to start a UFC career in history?
Man, I haven't really thought about it like that because I've just been so focused on each of the fights. You know, obviously, my goal was to get into the UFC. Once I knew I was testing free agency, I knew I wanted to go to the UFC. That was the first goal. Then I wanted to come in and make a statement, make myself be known right away. But, yeah, I mean, if this first 14, 16, 18 months of me fighting in the UFC – culminates with me fighting Conor McGregor, I think it's probably the best path anyone could have ever asked for. So we're going to go from there. You know, we're going to see what's happening. He's healing up. I'm healing up. I think the timeline works out really well.
Well, then you got to take some time after that. So McGregor's got some time after the broken leg. But after the fights that you've had, as you said, it hasn't been a long time. You said it. I'm not here for a long time. I'm here for a good time. And obviously, you have been having a good time in the UFC. Mike, after such an impressive fight with Justin Gaethje, you start to really see people's eyebrows raise. And obviously, the money fight at 155 is Conor McGregor. Conor gave you guys props on the night. But then he did an Ask Notorious segment on Sunday. And someone said, Conor, what do you genuinely think of Michael Chandler? Conor didn't reply. It's hard not to be impressed. In a game of inches, he has been incredibly close each time. He could well be today's champion. And then you wrote earlier in response to Conor McGregor, 2022, with a stare down between you two. When you think of the fight with Conor McGregor, first off, were you surprised by his reaction to what they said? Because anyone in the know understands, Mike, you were 30 seconds from beating Charles Oliveira and getting the finish. You could be the champ, but now you find yourself in this position after the Gaethje fight. But if you get a McGregor fight, how much has Michael Chandler really lost in this whole thing?
Yeah, you know, I mean, for me, obviously, as an athlete, the number one goal, I want to be the UFC champion. I want to be the number one guy in the world. But as fighters, we get into the sport because we want big stages, big opportunities against big opponents in big arenas. And it doesn't get any bigger than Conor McGregor. So I think what you're seeing there is, I think, mutual respect. For him to say that he was impressed by my performances, for him to say that I could very well be the champion, and still saying that this is a game of inches and we can all get caught. He's been caught. I've been caught. You've been caught. You fight long enough and you fight the toughest guys long enough, you're going to get caught. So I think there's a mutual respect there. You know, to me, that's genuine. That's how I like to do things. I'm not a big trash talk guy. I'm not a big attacker guy on social media.
But Mike, you understand that if the fight gets signed, is going to turn a bit ugly, because it always does with McGregor. Like, how are you going to handle that, though? Because you're right. I've known you since you wrestled in college at Missouri. You're a nice guy. You're a well-rounded guy. And you aren't a big trash talker. You're kind of a meat and potatoes type of guy. How do you handle when it does turn left against Conor McGregor? It's all fun and games right now. We're respectful. But what do you do when it does turn that way?
Well, I guess if the fight happens, I guess we'll see. You know, you might see a different side of me, but chances are, you know, I mean, I think I'm pretty good at using my vocabulary and my linguistic jujitsu to wrap guys up in some words that they may not understand, without having to really take to base level assaults or talking about different things that are going to be, you know, damaging to a guy's reputation, if you will. So, we'll see, man. I respect Conor for what he's done. I respect Conor as a fighter. I even respect his trash talk game. That's definitely something I'm not necessarily – I think it is something that I'm looking forward to. It's something that, as we said, big fights, big opponents, and big stages, and it just gets bigger and bigger and bigger with every single conversation that gets had, every single social media post, and every single moment that he and I would be on the microphone. So, you know, as we said, he needs to heal up. I need to heal up. We'll see if that fight happens. If it does – it's definitely going to be fireworks inside the octagon, and I guarantee I can carry my weight outside the octagon on the microphone.
Mike, you said ultimately you want to be the champion, though. If it's not McGregor, then who do we see Michael Chandler fight next, and when would Michael Chandler like to be back in the octagon?
I definitely want to look after my health first and foremost. Obviously, you saw the war I was just in. You know, giving myself through the holidays and the first couple months of the year to really take care of my body, get back into shape, and get back into camp. But probably middle of next year, May, June, July of next year, I think would be a great timeline for me after this fight that I was just in. And then as far as who, you know, I don't really know. You know, as we said, I want big fights, big names, big opportunities. But I also want that gold. So I'm kind of stuck between a conundrum between both, both different routes. These things usually work themselves out. I got phenomenal management and a phenomenal relationship with the UFC, and they are the best at putting on, fights and fights that fans are interested in. And I'm going to be in a nice big one in the middle of 2022.
Mike, you know, obviously you have had a lot of success in your career. You're winning. If you look at that living room, you understand that Michael Chandler is winning. But Michael Chandler, it's my show, and you came on my show to take an absolute L. Because Ryan Clark's not here, so we do lists every week. And Ryan Clark's not here to do a list, so I asked Michael Chandler, would you mind partaking in a list with me, Mike, as you visit the show? So, guys, today, the list is top fighters under 25 years old. It's going to be the top five, Chandler. It's going to be the top five, right, Mike? Top five fighters
under 25. First of all, you sprung this on me this morning. Clark must have got food poisoning at the last minute or something. And then you're all of a sudden, you said three fighters under 25. And then we get on here, we're doing sound checks, and you're trying to throw five at me. You're nuts. I can't believe it.
I make the rules. All right, stop. I'll let you do three. Let's do three, Chandler. Okay. I'll be fair.
Thank God.
You agreed to come. You blessed me with your presence. Michael Chandler, let's do three. It's not going to be a draft today. Let's do three fighters under 25 that if you had to build a promotion, these are the fighters that you are putting at the forefront to try to draw eyes. So, Michael Chandler, the floor is yours, my friend.
Okay, so you want me to name all three right now?
No. So what you do is you list them. Give me a little bit about each fighter. Yep, you give me a little bit about each fighter, and then you go to your next person. So you go three, but starting at the one that would be your last of the three. So you're going to make somebody mad.
Yeah, for sure. Okay, of the three, I'm going, or of my top three fighters under 25, at number three comes Miranda Maverick, not just because she's one of my hometown Missouri girls, but every time you watch her fight, when you used to watch her fight in Invicta, When you see her transition into UFC, I think she won her last fight against Macy Barber. But she's just so poised, so calm and collected the entire fight. She's extremely well-rounded, and I think she's going to be a champion in the women's division in the future.
People can't help themselves. You're a homer. You're a homer.
I am a homer.
Because she's from Missouri. You try to just drop it in there homer. And move on.
I got another homer for you later in my list, so just buckle up. Everybody's going to be mad at me. Coming in at number two is Jeff El Jefe Molina, Dana White Contender Series graduate. Okay? Mm. And we'll unpack his style. He's tenacious. He is extremely well-rounded. As we're saying, everybody keep in mind, this is all fighters under 25 years old. These guys barely have hair under their armpits, and they're fighting in the UFC. extremely well-rounded, a lot of finishes, eight of his 10 wins by finish. And one thing that stuck out to me, DC, that a lot of people will overlook, and you will appreciate this as a wrestler, you learn how to lose as a wrestler. And how Jeff Molina started his career, he started 1-2 in his career. Now, you tell me right now, if you and I both started mixed martial arts, we went 1-2 in our first three fights, we might think about hanging it up. But not Jeff Molina. So I think he's got a very bright future. Definitely number two on my list of top fighters under 25.
Top three because you won't do five. It's top three because you won't do five. So give me your number one, Michael Chandler.
Number one, I'm going Homer again. Of course, I shared the card with him on my last fight. Ian Garry. The future. Let me talk about the man's physical attributes, because the only thing as impressive or more impressive than the man's physical attributes is his confidence in himself. He's extremely long and tall and powerful for the division. As we said, he's still just a baby. He's under 25 years old. He won't even become a full man until he's 30. But his striking, his ability to negotiate distance between himself and his opponent, the way that he slid outside of that right hand in his last fight and knocked that dude out, Williams out in the last 5 seconds of that round, was nothing short of amazing. But as I said, and as a lot of people said about Conor McGregor, when he first came in, you see shades of Conor McGregor in Ian Garry, that Conor wasn't as good as he thought he was. But he was better than we all thought he was, and I think that's how Ian Garry is going to be. I think we have a future champion on our hands.
I'm gonna go and say that's like, Chandler, that's kind of like your golf game. You know, it's not good. Come on. It's not bad.
Hey, we still got to get back out there. I'm getting better, all right? I'm getting better.
It's not bad. It's just okay. Okay. All right. For me, guys, get ready for the champions list because here I come. At number three, I have got a three-way tie going down to six, right? So at number three, I've got a three-way tie. At number three, I got Macy Barber because, hey, maybe Macy's going to fall short of becoming the youngest champion of all time, but she is phenomenal. And she beat Miranda Maverick. Michael Chandler's number three. Tie for number three, I got Ignacio Bahamundes. Do you see? Remember when he fought Roosevelt Roberts? That spinning wheel kick knockout? It was truly something to behold. Tall, long guy. Different place. He's from a place that we don't expect many fighters to come from. So he brings his own people with him. And tied at number three, I have Usman Nurmagomedov. He fights in Bellator, your old stomping grounds. Got a rear naked choke last time. He's undefeated. He's 14-0. He has all the skills to become the man. So that'll be my tie. For number four. That's my tie. So at four, five, and six, those are the guys that I am listing. Now, at number three, I'm going to agree with you, my friend Michael Chandler. I will give it to Ian Garry. I told the kid in the fighter meetings, if you can fight like you can talk, okay, I'm going to really be in for a treat because I hadn't watched his fight yet as of fighter meetings. And you know what? He was very impressive. He did a good job taking advantage of the moment, but also the moment after on the microphone. At number two, how about Casey O'Neill? Casey O'Neill, the young lady from Las Vegas, the Australian, she goes out there and she's just overwhelming people. Chandler, we didn't expect anything from Casey O'Neill when she made her debut. She fought.
Nope.
She went out there, dominated. She's been dominant the whole time. And then the fight against, she beat Antonina Shevchenko in her last fight. So immediately she's in the rankings and she is still only 24 years old. Casey O'Neill is number two for me. And at number one, if I have got to build a promotion, Chandler, Song Yadong is still only 23 years old. He's still only 23
years old. I almost went with Song Yadong.
But you should have went with Song Yadong.
The homer in me wouldn't let me. I didn't have enough room on my list. And obviously, you're trying to beat me right now just by adding as many names as you possibly can.
What you mean?
A list of 30 has got 17 names on it.
Chandler, listen. Chandler, I make the rules. It's my show. I make the rules, and I couldn't choose a number three or four or five or six. So what all of them? But Song Yadong has been in some tremendous fights. He's had some tremendous knockouts, submissions, and he's only getting better. And Song Yadong is 23, man. It's crazy to watch how young these guys are and women, and they're still so early in their career, but the impact that they are making on the UFC. So that's my list, Chandler. I mean, guys, could you run it down the bottom real quick? Show my list real quick for Michael Chandler and show him how it's done. See, that's what
happens. All 17 of them. Number one, don't overlook.
Addison. Hey, we got my man Corporate Addison here today. Jake's off. So Corporate Addison, could you please run the list? Please. He said, hey, Chandler, Addison said there are so many names on my list that they're still trying to add them to the graphic.
Yeah. You got them over there just trying to type them all in, man. Can't even catch up with your list. But it is.
The full list. Hey, Chandler, the full list of 25 fighters under 25 is available on ESPN.com on Thursday with the story. So, Mike, hey, love that you gave us the time. Appreciate you giving the effort. But once again, the champ reigns supreme.
You're the judge, jury, and executioner. You decide right now who wins the game. Oh my gosh. This is great.
Chandler, here's my list.
I can't wait to play DC's games again.
Chandler, here's my list coming up on the screen here in about 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. Song Yadong, Casey O'Neill, Ian Garry, Usman Nurmagomedov, Macy Barber, Ignacio Bahamundes. That is how it's done, Michael Chandler. That is a class in how you whip somebody. Look, you whip them in the octagon. I whip them behind the microphone. Chandler, I appreciate it. Hey, it's like you and I walking to the center of the mat right now. We're going to shake hands. The official's going, oh, there's yours. I mean, it looks so empty, right, Mike? Look at it. Why does it seem so empty?
It does, man. It looks like I didn't put the effort in, but you just came in and cheated and threw all your names on there.
Mike, thank you for joining us. Hey, before I let you go real quick, champ, what do you think about Poirier Oliveira? If you had to pick a winner right now, if I held you hostage and I say, Chandler, give me a winner and how, who you got between Dustin Poirier and Charles Oliveira in the title fight coming up in a couple weeks?
If you got to go for an actual 100% winner on that fight and you had to go, for me, I go with my gut. I think it's Dustin Poirier. I think Dustin Poirier has been destined for UFC gold for many, many years. Charles Oliveira has looked extremely impressive, and he's great in every single area. But I do think Dustin Poirier just has too many tools. I think they have a very similar set of skills, but I think Poirier is better in each of those different areas. I think Poirier comes out probably with a later round finish, third round, fourth round, fifth round finish.
My man, Michael Chandler, thank you for joining us, man. Hey, I know you got some business today. Go and sell your third house and get more money because not enough. It's never enough for Michael Chandler. Thanks for joining us, champ. I appreciate it.
Thanks, bro. Appreciate you.
What's something that works so well that it's basically magic? Air conditioning, noise-canceling headphones, meeting-free Fridays. Well, what about selling with Shopify? Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business, from the launch at your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did-we-just-hit-a-million-order stage. Shopify is there to help you grow. Whether you're auctioning autograph apparel or selling sleek skis, Shopify helps you sell everywhere, from their all-in-one commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling. Shopify's got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout, up to 36% better compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S., and Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's extensive help resources are there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/DCRC. All lowercase, go to shopify.com/DCRC now to grow your business no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/DCRC.
Guys, in honor of V-Week, UFC is proud to support the Stuart Scott Memorial Cancer Research Fund, which supports cutting-edge cancer research and funds outstanding minority scientists. To learn more, please visit v.org/UFC. Once again, that's v.org/UFC. Now, this weekend, we are going to have our Fight Like Hell fight night between Rob Font and Jose Aldo. We do it every year, right? It's in honor of Stuart Scott. I met Stuart Scott one time in, like, Baltimore. And I remember he was coming out of the hotel, and I kind of walked up to him, and I said, hey, I'm a massive fan. Because Stuart Scott had sayings that really just resonated to people, especially in my demographic, right? The urban demographic, where I'm down in Louisiana and I see a guy on TV that sounds like me, that's saying things like cool, like the other side of the pillow. The one that I really love was that's gotta be jam because jelly don't shake like that or something like that. I'm not exactly sure what the terminology was, but that was the one that really did stand out to me. It was so cool. He was so fun. So when I saw him, I ran up to him and I said, hey, you know, I'm just a wrestler back then. I'm just a guy that on the Olympic team that goes to see someone I see on TV. And I tell him, hey, I'm a massive fan. It's really nice to meet you. Didn't want to hold him up, right? Because I hadn't had the greatest interactions with celebrities. But he was very generous with his time. He didn't shun me. He didn't act like a big shot. He just said, thank you so much. And then I let him go about his business. And this weekend, we have the Fight Like Hell fight night from the UFC Apex, and it features Jose Aldo versus Rob Font. And in regards to that fight, we have a tweet. And this is what the tweet said. Rap season said Rob Font or Jose Aldo. Now, guys, I'm a bit of a politician. I use my position within the commentary booth to shield myself from having to do this. Because every time I've done that, someone gets mad at me. So instead of telling you who I believe will win, I will talk to you about the matchup and why it is so good. It's a tremendous matchup. Because in Rob Font, New England cartel, him and Calvin Kattar and all those boys out there, those guys have that swag about themselves. They all wear the chain. They've taken over internally. We see them and it's like, oh, these are the boys from the New England cartel. You know, Calvin Kattar, Rob Font, and the boys. Well, when you talk about those guys, you talk about high-level boxing. And Rob Font is a tremendous boxer. The guy has so many skills. He fights behind a beautiful jab that keeps you at range. And when you get too close, he has nice left hook, right hand. He's got so many different ways to knock you out. I mean, we saw that in the Cody Garbrandt fight. You know, Cody Garbrandt is a former champion. And Rob Font beat him. And he really did kind of beat him behind the jab. And then you see this fight here. He fought against a kid that literally wants to wrestle you the whole time. And when you're fighting strikers, you think that that's the way to win the fight. Nope, not with Rob Font. He has tremendous takedown defense. But now he finds himself facing the king of real, Jose Aldo. Now, when we watched Jose Aldo last fight, he looked like a brand new man. And if you're really looking at things in terms of the grander terms, the grander scheme of things, this is Aldo's last opportunity to earn a championship fight. Now, I know you might be, oh, DC, you're living in the now. No, I'm not. Because if Jose Aldo can beat Rob Font after the fights that he's won recently, he's very viable as a guy that fights the winner of Aljamain Sterling and Piotr Jan. Now, I know Piotr Jan beat him before, so you would think that Aljamain Sterling needs to win the fight. But when you put the wins together and you have the name of a Jose Aldo, I don't see why not. Insane matchup. I was supposed to work a fight in late September. I got moved off of that fight to the Aldo versus Font fight because I understand how big a night it's going to be for the bantamweight division when you have a guy that many consider the greatest UFC featherweight of all time in Jose Aldo fighting against a guy that is as gifted as Rob Font. And I truly believe that in the Chito Vera fight, we saw the evolution of Jose Aldo. Because for a long time, you never saw Jose Aldo go to his wrestling. Even though you've heard jiu-jitsu, black belt, and all these other things, you never saw him do it. Against Marlon Vera, he went and took him down to win the third round, which gave him the win. When you look at the stats, though, right? Champion in the featherweight division from 2010 to 15 was the last WEC champion. He's won more title fights in the featherweight division than anyone in the UFC's history. And there has not been anyone more active as they have progressed in their career as Jose Aldo. He's gotten better, and he's gotten more willing to fight. There was a time when Jose Aldo struggled to make featherweight. Now the guy's showing up at 135 in the best shape of his entire life. That's going to be needed this weekend if he's going to get his hand raised against a very tough and durable Rob Font. So now we do one round with Benil Dariush. So we've done two rounds today on the show, and now we bring in, I mean, the distinguished gentleman. Benil, let me tell you something. I love the white hair, my friend. You look like you can cover. You look like you put a suit on. You might be a nice, very strapping young businessman with that nice gray. I love it. I love it, Benil. I mean, I wish I had
it. Listen, I get so much crap for it. They're like, how does he look like this 32-year-old I've ever met or ever seen? And you know, every time I put a video up and people start sending memes about, like, old dudes doing jiu-jitsu, I'm over it, man. Like, yeah, I get enough of it at home from my wife.
Hey, I think it looked good. I got to be honest. What I would not give for that head of hair, Benil. I mean, you look distinguished, my friend. You're strapping, young gentleman. Now, Benil, you're obviously in practice or just getting done. You're sweating. You're working hard because you just got the big fight announcement. How excited are you to be in what many see as the number one contender's fight?
Man, I'm stoked because, you know, big respect to Islam and Habib and that team. They're one of the best teams right now in the game. And, you know, it was kind of hard getting this matchup because obviously our manager was like, you guys are the best in the division. I want you guys fighting for the title. And also the timing for the last fight for Islam, he needed to do Abu Dhabi. And I just had a baby, so I couldn't do Abu Dhabi. I told him I could do December. And they said, no, he had to be there. So it was a little bit tricky, but I'm stoked for this fight, man. Islam is so good. He's one of the best guys, if not the best.
So when did this fight first come onto your radar? Are you saying that they tried to get this fight done for UFC 267?
Yeah, remember when Islam fought, it was Thiago Moises. And he finished Thiago Moises,
so it was back then, yes.
Yeah, Dana said, hey, I want him to fight Dariush. And, you know, I was like, man, if we could do December, that makes perfect sense for me. I like, let's go. And I found out that Islam had to do October 30th for Abu Dhabi because he has such a big fan base and they love him over there and they have to have him over there, which is, I was like, all right, I understand. But, like, just had a baby. I have no clue what I'm doing. I'm going to need some.
You know, so when you look at the fight, and people say, like Khabib yesterday was like, well, they're the two best lightweights in the world. They're fighting each other. When you look at the fight, you've got a very unique style that a lot of people think could cause Islam problems. So when you look at the matchup, why were you so willing to take a fight that so many, Benil, are trying to avoid? Like, you know, a lot of people talk about Islam not having the top five wins, but it's because a lot of people avoid that fight. Benil Dariush, you're running towards that interaction.
So one of the things I like about this fight is we, in a lot of ways, mirror each other. He is he's a southpaw. I think he's a little bit taller than me. He's like 5'10", 5'11". He does a lot of feints and gets to the takedowns and pressure guys and breaks people. I like doing all that. That's like my game too. You know, he likes wrestling. You know, I mean, I just think it's going to be a great fight, and it's going to be an opportunity for us to grow. So I'm looking forward to it.
Benil, what have you done over the course of the 7-fight win streak, or what have you changed that's allowed for you to have the success that you've had lately? I mean, early in your career, it was get rolling, maybe take a step back, have a loss here or there, but now it seems like everything's clicking. What have you done differently to be where you are today, 7 wins in a row, 11 finishes, and honestly, not just finishes, some of the most insane things that we've ever seen inside the octagon, the finishes that you're getting in there. What have you changed?
So one thing was getting healthy. So I was on a 5-fight win streak, and then I started alternating wins, and then I went 2 years without a win, and one of the things was my neck and back were so messed up, and I didn't even realize it. I was just like, I'm getting older. I just need to deal with it. You know, it is what it is. But I was getting one practice in a day, and then I would spend maybe the next day off, or I'd have to like do a recovery practice and things like that. And I couldn't get in that octagon and be as sharp as I can now. Getting my neck and back to normal, getting the required, like, little things, the tedious things that I have to do for PT, getting all those things done. I'm able to do 2 practices a day now. Some days, if I don't kill myself, I can do 3 practices a day. It's a huge change, you know. It's because I love wrestling. I enjoy wrestling, and I want to wrestle every day. But back then, it was like, you're lucky if you get 2 practices a week with the way my neck was.
Do you think the 5-round fight benefits? Who's the benefit? You? Or Islam, because it's different, right? Islam wants to break people, but it's more methodical. Your pace is just nuts. I think that's one of the things earlier in the show, I spoke to a fan question asking about you, and I said, Benil has a I don't give a beep, beep, beep type of approach to the fight, and it just overwhelms guys. So who does the long fight play to their favor, you or Islam?
So it's kind of like this. If I stick to the game plan and do what I'm supposed to do and fight the way I should, it's going to be a more of a methodical fight for both of us. So it should benefit both. We both get to show more of our technique. But something happens in that octagon and, like, especially when I get denied. Like, with Diego Ferreira, he kept denying my takedowns. He kept getting back up. And when he would get back up, he would, like, try to put this pressure over me with this intensity. And it just pissed me off, you know? Like, I was like, bro, like, not doing that to me, you know? I'm not a businessman. It's not just one game plan. I could dig just as deep as you. I could dig further. I'm willing to die in here, you know? So, like, the Diego fight was like that because he kept ruining my game plan. The game plan was take him down, control him. And so when he stopped that, I said, well, that's fine. We can do it your way. That's fine with me. And then the Tony fight was more methodical, obviously. So it's really going to depend on how the fight goes, how the first couple of rounds go. You know, if Islam keeps denying all my game and doesn't allow me to do what I want to do, then it's going to be in the air.
But, you know, is it weird being in a number one contenders fight when it seems like Justin Gaethje is the number one contender? And if you win the fight in March, how quickly would you like to get that title fight? Because not many people have to win 7 fights in a row, 8 fights in a row in order to earn a championship opportunity.
Yeah, like, I was getting so frustrated with the top five. I was like, listen, man, I want to fight. December is going to be 6 months. And I'm like, I'll take somebody outside the top 10 if I have to. And Ali literally said to me, listen, if you're going to do this, fire me now. I don't want to be your manager if you're going to do this, if you're not going to listen to me. And then my wife got on my case, and then my coaches. So it turned into a big mess. And I was like, all right, we're not doing that. We'll stick with what you guys want. We'll wait for whatever fight they give me top five. So I'm assuming I'm going to end up in the same position where I'm just going to have to wait. I would like to fight earlier. I feel right now the way my neck is, how healthy I am, I can fight every 3-4 months. I mean, I fought Diego in I want to say it was March. Was it March or February? And then I fought again in May. So it was a 3-month period, I remember. And it was fine. And I would like more of that, but it's not always what I want now. I'm married, man. I got a wife, I got a daughter. I got a scary manager. I got a scary coach. Rafael So a lot of people would be scared of.
Well, congratulations, my friend, on all the success, not only inside the octagon, but I know you have your gym in Anaheim, Kings MMA Anaheim, where you're training right now. I'm not going to keep you any longer. Get back to work. Prepare. It is going to be a phenomenal fight between you and Islam, two of the most deserving fighters in the lightweight division. But Neil, my friend, thank you so much for joining me. I appreciate you.
Appreciate it, brother. Take care. You guys be safe.
Guys, now it's time for Ask DC. Hamzat Chimaev said, DC, brother, let's make a wrestling match. What do you think? Hamzat, this is crazy, my brother. You can wrestle. I saw you beat Jack Hermanson. But there's no way you could wrestle me in a wrestling match. Hamzat Chimaev, no disrespect to the beautiful people of Sweden. Alexander Gustafsson gave me one of my hardest fights of all time. But Hamzat, let me say this to you, my friend. When I was in the Olympics listen, I wrestled in the Olympics. When I was in the Olympics or the World Championships, if I saw Sweden on the bracket, I had a bye. Like, that is how I looked at a match between me and anyone from Sweden. I understand the Russian roots. I understand. You got the skills. You got skills, Hamzat. I love you, my friend. But fall back. You don't want the smoke. You don't want all of this smoke. I mean, look at the champ. Look at the champ. You don't want this smoke, Hamzat. Fall back. You were good calling out Brock Lesnar and George St. Pierre. You don't want the smoke. And now, the next one comes from Nathaniel. DC, man, will the Saints step up and make a playoff run, or are we dead in the water? Guys, the injury situation and the quarterback situation down in New Orleans have really set us back. Trevor Siemian, while looking good in week one as a starting quarterback or in reserve role after Jameis got hurt, it made me feel as though we had an opportunity. But up lately, it's been bad. And we can't stay healthy. I mean, you're putting so much stress on the defense right now to try to keep us in games that they're ultimately going to break down. We had one of the top-rated defenses in the NFL to start the year, but they're on the field so much that now the rating of our defense is starting to go up. And of course it's going to happen. You've got to be on the field. You've got to have long drives that take time off the clock. We're three and out just about every single time. And even Sean Payton, the offensive mastermind that he is, has not been able to make this offense be worth much. So, unfortunately, I'm kind of giving up, man. It kind of sucks. It kind of sucks that I will admit that we are not making a playoff run this time, Who Dat Nation. So, let it go. Who we got next? Let me see. Put it up on the screen. All right, this is from J.C. Andrus. Cajun rice or rice dressing, guys? The only time a person from Louisiana orders Cajun rice is when they're at Popeyes. It's called rice dressing. It is one of, if not, the greatest dishes that I have ever had in my entire life. And my mama, Audrey, makes some of the best rice. I'll tell you one thing. My mama cooks better than anybody in the world, actually. All of her food is the best that I've ever had. And her rice dressing, next level. This is a beautiful mixture of ground beef with a little bit of liver, some roux, onions, bell pepper, the Holy Trinity, and then you simmer it all down. Once it's all done, you take the rice, and then you mix it with the mix, the rice dressing mix, pork steaks, fried chicken. It don't matter what you mix that with. Rice dressing is as good as it comes, especially Audrey Cormier's rice. Look at my head. You see how my head's doing this? Nobody make rice dressing like Audrey Cormier. And guys, before I go, this is no question. I would just like to give a massive congratulations to the Oklahoma State football team because Bedlam last weekend was absolutely bananas. Now, Oklahoma State and Mike Gundy, I'm a man. I'm 40, Coach. You're 40. You're 50. Coach, you're everything. We love you in Stillwater, Coach, and I'm so happy that you are committed to us. Not like the rest of these coaches that are bouncing around everywhere, taking jobs here, taking jobs there. One that we sent packing last Saturday after Bedlam by Lincoln Riley. We put Lincoln Riley on a private jet to Southern California because now he understands that Bedlam has swayed in the Oklahoma State way, and now ain't no coming back. Dude, I was nervous for a little bit, but once the Cowboys got going, we got it done. It was a great Bedlam win. And guys, how about the class of the Oklahoma State Stadium staff? The rumor was that Lincoln Riley was going to Baton Rouge. So how about you put calling Baton Rouge by Garth Brooks over the PA system for Lincoln Riley as he leaves the field because they thought he was heading down south. Ultimately, he went to UFC. But we take full credit for Lincoln Riley tucking his tail and getting out of Oklahoma because Oklahoma belongs to the Cowboys after last Saturday. So great job, boys. We're proud of you. Go Pokes, go Cowboys, the greatest university in the entire world. Guys, thank you so much for joining me. Thank you to Michael Chandler. Thank you to Benil Dariush. I appreciate each and every one of you for submitting those questions. I know I didn't get to all of them, but we got to a few. You guys are smart. The questions are very well thought through. I really appreciate the fans. Until next time, Ryan Clark, get healthy. Get back. I need you because I need somebody to whip on every single week. Michael Chandler took it for you this time, but we can't subject him to that type of abuse week in and week out. It takes a very special person, Ryan, to show up here and take L's every single time. Until next week, guys, I'm Daniel Cormier. Thank you for joining me, and I'll see you next week. Peace.
The 2024 NFL Draft heads to Detroit, and it's time to see who gets the job.
Caleb is a unique and special talent throwing the football.
And what sets them apart.
The Heisman Trophy winner is Jaden Daniels.
All of the greats were hired here.
What a throw by Mahomes.
See who gets the job.
Are you ready?
The 2024 NFL Draft begins Thursday, April 25th on ESPN, ABC, and NFL Network.